Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Your Toronto Blue Jays are going through it. Not hitting home runs
at
the level we expect. Yeah. Well, you know, you lead the league in home runs 1 month and you have fewer than individual players the second month. It's quite the contrast. Quite the contrast to where we thought they'd
be. I need to tell you one stat, Blake.
Okay.
I need a stat for you. This is an analytics for you. Okay. You ready for this? Rowdy Tellez and Randall Grichuk have one less home run than George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year.
Yeah. Hmm. Rowdy's been awesome.
He has more home runs than any Blue Jay.
Yeah. He's been awesome.
Analytics.
I don't know how clear it becomes from, like, our wake and break segments teeing up the night's MLB games, but, like, the Brewers are, like, I would guess my unofficial NL team for the year. Like, I've watched a lot of Brewers baseball so far this year, and it's nice to see Rowdy... Sure. Having that kind of season. Because the Grichuk thing is like a Coors Field product, and it's mostly like, I don't think we talk about him at all if Raimel Tapia wasn't, you know, Raimel Tapia so far.
We'll
keep it diplomatic.
It's been bad, and there's a lot of different reasons as to why the Blue Jays are bad. Obviously, the chase rate is really chief among them. But yeah, runners in scoring position. They went from hitting almost 300 last year with runners in scoring position to under 200. And like, that's the biggest culprit right now. We'll ask our next guest what he's seeing at the dish, what he's seeing with these guys. Carlos Pena, former MLB first baseman, current MLB network analyst, creator of Placata. He joins us now. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
I hope I didn't overwhelm you with those analytics when you were waiting on the line.
Home runs.
My brain almost exploded when I heard the analytics that you dropped on me.
Hey, man, it's hard for me not to bring up the numbers. I don't want me to overwhelm people. I know they're just having their coffee. I know, you know, you just wait, eased in your day, and I'm coming in here with these heavy numbers, these heavy stats, but I'm doing my best. So, man, you've watched a lot of this team. You watched a lot of these guys. I'm going to start with Vladdy because last night he comes up with the bases loaded and a pitcher that has walked two straight guys and hits a ground ball, first pitch, right into the area of the field that he's been hitting him, which is to the left side. It's been over and over and over again right now. He's been fighting it. He's been going through it. It's kind of getting now to the point where it's a reminder of where he was at a couple of seasons ago. I just wonder what you think of what Vladdy's doing at the dish right now. Like, what are you seeing?
It's amazing to me how even from personal experience, it's amazing to me how we can have great seasons, right? Mm-hmm. And then pretty much slump or not perform up to our potential for long periods of times, and we cannot figure out why. Now, when we're inside the frame, like when we're going through it, it's hard for us to step outside and be like, okay, why is this happening? Now, that me now as an analyst, that I'm removed emotionally from the everyday rigors of playing Major League Baseball and hitting every single day, I can see almost clearly why I would go into those types of spells. What I would like to happen is for these players, you know, for Vladdy and for all these hitters, to be able to recognize when they're doing well, why they're doing well, and how they're able to accomplish that performance. And over again, I get reminded of the fact that that is not, you know, that really players do not have a grasp on that particular reason, the how and the why, which is exactly the most compelling. That's what you should focus on. So, for example, for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., why is he doing well? When he had that huge season last season, you know, why was he performing at the level that he was performing? Timing was the exact reason why he exploded, right? Now, if he's doing anything else right now, away from focusing on the timing, so you're talking about him hitting the ball on the ground a lot to the left side, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, am I early? The reason why he's doing that, if you were objectively looking at it, guys, this is emotionally removed, is because he's late. He collapses to create space to be able to get the barrel to the ball. So when you do that, the swing plane starts going up and you top the ball. Now you're like, how in the world? What do you mean? He swings up, the ball goes down. Yes, and the only reason why he's swinging up is because he's late and he has to collapse the backside to go backwards. So there's like a very distinct reason, like scientific, geometrical reason, because you're creating angles that are not beneficial. But the root of the problem is timing. Now, that whole entire explanation I just gave you, I didn't mean to blow your mind, but I'm getting back at you because you blew my mind.
Yeah, I know.
That.
We're going back and forth. We're going back and forth. Everybody's having a tough time. I'm locked in. I'm totally following what you're saying. This is a difficulty for me, Carlos, is like, how do you approach a guy like that who's obviously such a stud? Because people keep bringing up the idea of like, hey, all right, it's a timing. Okay, you're saying it's a timing issue, and you would know better than anybody else. Like, you're somebody who actually was a really, really good hitter in Major League Baseball. You've seen a ton of this guy. I just wonder, like, when does it become something where coaching gets involved? Or is this something where you go hands-off and you say, like, this is going to normalize it? What do you do with this? Like, is this an approach situation where you're trying to change maybe a little bit of Vladdy's approach when he gets to the dish? Because, like, he's swinging at a lot of pitches outside the zone. His chase rate has not been very good. Is this something you address with him at this point, or does that make the issue worse? Like, is he the kind of guy that wants the coaching?
Yeah, see, so this is where psychology comes in. And how do you approach a player, you know, the communication skills? Yes, you would like to think that the coaching is right on, and you don't let this drag. So that's what my frustration is. This is the blind side of, you know, this is what Major League Baseball gets blindsided. Like, you know, really, I want to let Vlad go through a spell when I can clearly see the reason why he is having a tough time, right? Like, if I got good information, or maybe I'm just telling you, right? It's like something that the hitting coach is listening to and saying, oh, really? I never thought, you know, I haven't thought of that. Well, immediately you can begin to fix it, you know? And it could be as simple as saying, you need to get started a little bit earlier. He's like, what do you mean? I think I'm getting started right at the right time. You know, we can get extremely technical about this, but neurologically speaking, we get used to certain things. You get used to it. So what feels normal today may not be what felt normal to you a month ago. You know what I'm saying? So yep. You're like, I'm doing the same thing. Not really. I'm doing the same thing I was doing last season. So I'm getting ready at the same time I was getting ready last season. Not really. I can show you on video and you can see the clock running and you can see that your cadence is not exactly the same as it was last year. But it feels the same. So that's the complication of being a hitting coach or a Major League Baseball player, is that a lot of times we feel something that is not true. We're like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm getting ready on time. Well, when I show you the video and I show you the time clock, I can prove to you that you're not where you need to be, even though it feels fine to you. So that's the complication. How do you approach a Major League hitter? You have to bring them evidence, because they think, you know, we think, because I'm going to include myself in this group. Guys, I thought I knew it all. I thought no one could teach me anything. And I was very teachable. And that's me, who I'm very teachable. So that's where the art of coaching, communication, and being humble as a hitter to be able to receive information comes in. So it's a frustrating to you if I told you that the fix is easier to find than most of us think. That's extremely frustrating, but that is the truth. The solution is right in front of us. It's just we can't see it.
So that is a little frustrating, because It's frustrating and it's also comforting, right? Because I think that if you're looking at reasons for optimism with the Blue Jays, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is still not in a worry spot, right? And, like, who's worried about Vladdy? I think there's a greater conversation with this Jays team of, like, what do you actually need from Vlad in order to be competitive with this, with the rest of these bats? And that's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But I'm not thinking that this guy is going to continue to, you know, go through another month. I bet you this is the only month in his career, if it ever closes this way, where he only has one home run, which is what he has in May so far. But you're right in the sense of, okay, I believe that the coaching staff has to be approaching him with these things, that they probably let it go a certain amount of time without any major adjustment. But right now, they're probably bringing him the evidence. They're probably showing him some of the things that you're discussing right now. But publicly, Charlie Montoyo loves saying, you know, hitting is contagious. Hitting is contagious, and the bats will come around. The bats will come around. And then you have the shuffling of the batting order where the Jays have moved Vladdy up to the two hole. They've moved him back. They've moved him around the last couple of games. They've just tried to shuffle up the deck chairs. And I wonder if you think that, like, that's an effective strategy for a baseball team in general. Like, the idea of just trying to keep things completely calm when nobody's really hitting and kind of papering over your problems where, again, like, the Blue Jays are chasing. They're swinging and missing at a lot of pitches outside the zone. Their chase rate on non-strikes is, like, among the worst in baseball. If it is kind of a productive thing to be like, hey, it's just switching up the batting order and it's telling guys that we're going to eventually do it because it's a math game, or whether or not, like, this team needs a little bit more tough love right now.
You bring a great point. I mean, are you serious? Like, let's address the elephant in the room. Guys, we're not hitting. We're having horrible at-bats. So we can shift. We can switch the lineup all we want. What are we trying to do? Like, play psychological games to see if I can, like, make you feel somewhat uncomfortable and I get you out of your funk because I put you in a situation that you're not used to, so you're going to have to adapt. I'm like, we're going around the bush. Let's go straight to the root of the problem and let's address it collectively. Let's have an approach that we 1 through 9 understand. Because can you believe that this could be as simple as having a conversation and saying, for example, to Vlad Guerrero Jr., just because, you know, he's one of the most celebrated, you know, stars in the game right now, and say, okay, can you get ready earlier, maybe 3 clicks, you know, more, you know, earlier than you think is reasonable right now? Because if you do that, you put yourself in a better position to get healthy swings at the baseball. Let's say that's the only thing I tell him. That might make all the difference. Now, as a coach, I know the calculation. I know the numbers. I know the angles. I know the measurements I've made in order to have the basis and the evidence to go up to him. And there needs to be this trust factor where I go to him and I say, hey, you're late. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, you are. I don't feel like you are. So can you get started for me today just 3 or 4 clicks earlier? And maybe he understands that. So instead of you thinking that the guy throws 94, think that he throws 100, you know, just to fool your brain a little bit. It could be. That's all it could be. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's the frustrating part, me as an analyst, right? So I went through it as a player. But me now as an analyst, looking at what my struggles were as a player and why I struggled and why I succeeded, now I'm looking, and it gets frustrating for me because it could be as simple as that. Shifting the lineup and doing this and that, we're going around the bush. Unfortunately, it's not the Blue Jays is the only team that does that. All these teams try to, like, figure out a magical way to get fixed. That's going around the bush and wasting time. You have to go straight for the jugular, you know what I mean, which is the root of the problem, which is timing. The lineup as a whole is off. It's off timing-wise. They're not getting healthy swings at the baseball, period. Yeah. Let's address that.
100%, man. I'm with you. And, like, I'm not against shuffling up lineups necessarily, but I just think that this one was the most obvious, like, oh, we don't have a solution right now, so we're going to just get desperate and try this thing. It's like, yeah, okay. But I'm with you. It's like, what's the root of the problem? I have two other things on this, and I'll stick with Vlad, and I'll keep with Vlad for 1 second here, which is, like, one thing that's been frustrating me recently is with the struggles that Vladdy's had is you keep hearing this thing in Toronto. People keep going, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know who started it. And I know that part of it is true, but also it's when you're talking about things that frustrate me is people keep saying now, well, he's being pitched tough. people are pitching to him tough. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm watching Aaron Judge right now. It seems like teams are pitching to him tough, and he's got 16 home runs, and he's nailing the baseball. I think that guys have always tried to pitch Mike Trout tough. He's still done extremely, extremely well. Part of this is growing pains as a young hitter. Absolutely, I understand that. But can you just speak to why we talk about this even, like the idea that someone is being pitched tough when they're like an elite bat? Like, what does that even mean to you?
Yeah, it means nothing immediately just by the statement alone. It really doesn't, because you need to understand pitchers out there are also randomly going through sequences. So, okay, without getting too technical, they get out there, they look at the catcher's signs, and they throw the pitch. And usually they don't even shake. They just go whatever the catcher says. So what ends up happening is that if I were to calculate exactly, you know, what a perfect sequence is based on so many different things, right? It could be there's many different factors that I look at when we're grading a sequence, right? Like, wow, that sequence was EV effective, like effective velocity, effective, maximizing the effects of, you know, the neurologically what happens to the hitter, a visual hold, tunneling, you know, differentials, speed differentials, et cetera, et cetera. We can go down the weeds on that. You know, there's a deep rabbit hole there that we can go down to. I'm not going to do that right now. But what pitchers do is they stumble in and out of good sequences almost randomly. The better ones have really good sequences more often than not, but even them, they are not perfect. So when you're talking about him getting pitched tough, it's a combination of pitchers stumbling into decent sequences almost randomly, by the way, not even purposely, which is mind-boggling to me that this game that is a million-dollar industry, we're still taking chances. Like, there's, what do you feel? You feel like throwing a fastball here? What do you mean, what do you feel like? Like, you need to know what the best effective pitch is at the moment and why and how you do it. So hitting, then you're off-timing, and there is in and out of these, you know, pretty good sequences randomly. So as you can see, it's almost like a flip of a coin. What do we want to do as hitters? We want to eliminate chance. We want to see if we can control the controllable. That's where what is missing here. So getting pitched tough, I don't buy that. I don't buy it because it's random. So what you're saying is that last year, pitchers weren't pitching him tough? You know, like, of course they were pitching him, you know, the same way. It's just that his approach was more conducive to success, you know? So I don't like that. That's another waste of time. Another waste of thinking, saying he's getting pitched tough, he'll come around. But we can address this today. We can literally have a conversation tonight and he have a better game tonight just because of the conversation we had. But I'm removed. I'm out of the frame. I'm analyzing this from a 30,000 feet view, you know, eagle's eye view. So it's easier for me to see the situation. Will he pick up the phone and talk to me about it? I'm not, maybe not.
I hope he does. It feels like there's a potential. Maybe you're going to be a hitting coach for this team soon. Like, I don't know. It seems like it's on the table.
Unbelievable.
Carlos, that's great insight, though, and it's something that, you know, we can see a little bit, and obviously you've done it, right? You've had the dealing with tough pitchers or tough slumps, and then you've had 46 home run seasons. You have a better vocabulary to verbalize these things that we think we're seeing. So I'm curious, that's we've talked a lot about what's going wrong and what the warning signs are. So Vlad comes out tonight, and Carlos, if you're going to wake up tomorrow and be like, damn, Vlad really showed me something. I think maybe something's clicked. Maybe he's turned a corner. What does that look like for you? Other than obviously he hits four home runs, it's going to look really good. But process-wise, approach-wise, how do you come out of this game tonight or come out of this series this weekend feeling better about where Vlad's at?
I want to see, you know, a good evidence of a hitter that is truly in tune and in cadence with timing is when you see healthy swings, when you see no obstruction on a swing. Almost looks like they're hitting off the tee, right? Because their timing is, he's free. He doesn't have to modify his mechanics to get the barrel to the baseball. So if you watch for that, which will probably result in some hard contact, not necessarily hits, but healthy swings, hard contact. He may not get base hits, but you will see the ball come off the bat the right way. That tells you, okay, he's now in cadence with the pitches that were thrown in that particular swing, which tell you a couple of things, which is maybe the pitcher chose a pitch that matched Vlad's timing, which is what happens a lot. You see pitchers throw it into a hitter's timing and cadence, and you're like, wow, that was a good pitch. Well, no, you threw it right into his timing, his cadence. So that's what I'll be watching tonight. I want to see if he gets to the elevated fastball and he gives himself enough time to hit it. That's one of those check marks, right? One of those markers that I'm looking for that always tells me, oh, wait a second. He gave himself enough time to hit the elevated fastball. Okay. There was no obstruction on that swing. That's a good sign. As a matter of fact, I would immediately, if I had a conversation this morning with him, I would say, Larry, start from the top down. Let's go to the highest velocity at the top of the zone, and let's take that away from the pitcher. That's all you're doing today. Let's start top of the zone, work from the top down. Let's make sure you give yourself enough time to hit his best fastball at the top of the zone. Let's say that's the only conversation I have with him today. You're probably going to get some healthy hacks. He will probably get healthy hacks. And I know why, and I know how that happens. So that's what I would do as a coach. So that's what I would be looking for. That's what I would advise. Very simple. I'm not asking him to solve a mathematical equation. This is just something that he's done for his whole entire life. He just might be a little bit off.
Yeah. Hey, he doesn't have to come on the show like you and have to deal with all that crazy math that I threw at you right away. He just got tightened up a little bit. Carlos Pena, former MLB first baseman, currently with MLB Network, a man who hit 46 bombs in the show. No big deal. Thanks for joining us this morning, man. A great insight as always.
Always a pleasure, guys. You know what they say, right? Bernard Shaw has said that in order for you to be considered an expert in something, you would have to have failed at it dramatically and periodically. I fit that mold. Gone through it. I've gone through these pains, and I've also had some success. So, you know what we should do? We should like set time aside and talk about, you know, talk for an hour about this stuff. It's so interesting to me. But hopefully the guys, you know, the Jays can get back into swinging the bats nice and healthy, man. That's a very capable lineup.
Healthy hacks. I love that. Yeah, that's all I'm going to be thinking of tonight. Healthy hacks. Give me some healthy hacks. Carlos Pena, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, guys.
See you, pal. Again, that's Carlos Pena. And that's what I want to see, too, is like I know that sounds overly simplistic at times, and I thought Carlos did a great way of breaking it down. But, yeah, you want to feel like this team is taking good at-bats, and that's the thing that you can see right now more than anything, right, is like, yeah, clearly runners in scoring position is partially luck, right? They're not going to hit sub 200, but the at-bats have been bad. Like, these are bad at-bats. Mm-hmm. When you're a struggling hitter and you beat one into the ground on the first pitch against a relief pitcher that can't find the zone, it's a bad at-bat. When you guys are constantly swinging outside the zone at bad pitches and you're leading baseball in that category, those are bad at-bats. They have to have what Carlos just said, the healthy hacks. I think Jays fans right now, it's an educated enough fan base. I know they take a lot of heat, but I think it's a smart enough fan base that people are going to be able to recognize when the at-bats start to shift and what's bad luck versus what's bad plate appearances.
Absolutely. And you say it can sound simplistic, but what does almost every coach or analyst we have on say when a player is struggling, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter? It's you got to simplify things. And the easiest way to get yourself out of a slump is to focus on a few things instead of focusing on everything. And I mentioned the Bo Bichette 2-homer game where he was clearly locked into slider up in the zone is my pitch in this game. And he had an area of the strike zone and he had a pitch. And that was his plan at the plate. And there were a couple ugly swings, but you stick with that over a game or you stick with that over a week and having you trust that, hey, I'm Bo Bichette. I'm going to hit enough of these and I'm going to drive enough of these if I stick to that approach. If you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it's the same thing. And Carlos Pena talking about, hey, let's focus on heat up in the zone. Sure, pitchers aren't throwing a lot at him up in the zone right now. They're certainly not throwing a lot of hard stuff up in the zone right now. But Vlad is chasing 36.4% of pitches low and away during this extended slump. More than a third of the pitches that are low and away, he's offering at them. And his exit velocity on those drops almost 20 miles an hour on an average ball in play. He is swinging at pitches that he can't, or at least right now, isn't driving. And I know he's got great plate coverage. I know he keeps the bat head through the zone. I know he can poke those the other way for singles. And there are the odd isolated play appearance where you're like, yeah, that's a great piece of work. You're not getting anything to hit. You poke it into right field. Big picture, though, low and away is not Vlad's Q zone. That's not where he's getting Vlad-level stuff. That's not where he's getting MVP-level stuff. And, JD, I love the point that you've kept making, that this idea that pitchers are pitching them tougher, it's like, oh, well,
no, it's insane.
Pitchers should pitch everyone tough then.
Yeah, no, I know. I need it to stop because it's really happening everywhere, and it's like pervasive amongst my friend group, online, analysts. Like, I'm telling you, I've seen this from like credible baseball people where they're going, it's getting pitch tougher this year. I'm like, what are we bleeping talking about here?
Barry Bonds got walked like a billion times and still managed to hit home runs.
Pitching him tough. Yeah, pitching him tough. We're really going to do that. I think that the reason why some of this is happening is because we all know that Vladdy's going to bounce back and that he's going to end up looking good and he's going to finish with quality numbers this season. But part of this component to me is, yeah, he probably needs to make the adjustment, but maybe the reason why they're going like, we're saying this outward publicly or we're shifting things around is because they know what I think we're seeing a little bit, which is some of this is mental. Vladdy came into the season with MVP expectations. He was sour he didn't win MVP. He said, I know it's who cares it, but it's going to be one of those quotes where if the season sucks, we remember it forever. But the whole, hey, this is the trailer. That last season was the trailer. This season is
what,
the movie.
For a horror movie?
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's like you got to deliver on those things. And this is the first season where, I think that Blake said it. The climb is done. They're expected to win championships, not just have good individual seasons. The rest of the team is struggling around Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which I think is only amped up or ramped up, whichever the one that it's supposed to be there. I think ramped up. I don't think amped up. The intensity in which he probably feels like he needs to win games with his bat. He's still a young player who is probably learning how to deal with some of the ebbs and flows of a season like this. But yeah, you see it with Vladdy after some of his plate appearances, how pissed off he is. He looks like he's not all the way there right now from a mental standpoint in terms of feeling good about himself. It's pretty clear and obvious. Once he works out of this slump, he'll be better. But I think that getting out of that slump is going to start with what Carlos said, which is hard evidence of someone saying, this is the one thing we need you to do, and then building off of that. Like, build off the one small thing and then continue to get better.
So remember when Vlad smashed his bat across his knee in frustration? That was a week ago. That was before an extra week of struggling was tacked on. Credit to him for still being a good teammate and stuff. You see him in the dugout rooting on other guys and going over video and stuff with guys. That's kind of the expectation when you're one of the faces of the franchise and the leaders. He's not wearing it. He's not wearing it outside of his walk back to the dugout, but he's wearing it. You couldn't not. You can't be this talented a hitter who, like, this is a guy who's so smart in terms of knowing pitchers' approaches that in that exhibition game in Montreal, he called the pitch that he was going to hit out. Like, that's a legendary this guy's coming soon story. He has shown us a lot of times that he can figure this stuff out and he can pull himself out of it. For me, the big thing, I know Carlos said, focus on the high heat up in the zone. For me, the big indicator is ground ball rate. When Vlad's beating him into the ground, that's always the telltale sign. And I'm going to have a fast breakdown tomorrow on exactly that. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to tee up this Jays game a little bit more tonight. We're going to talk about that Battle of Alberta. We're going to give you our best bets. It's the Wake and Rake next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wake and Rake, Sports at 590 The Fan, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. I am usually the one that tells you guys not to talk about the music because the podcast listeners, they don't hear the songs. You should be able to put wrestling songs onto the podcast, like as if that's like a royalty. That's public domain. Like that, we just played Shane McMahon's song, which is to me, I would say if I had to make like a top five list of all time greatest wrestling songs, Shane McMahon's Here Comes the Money is, oof, it's high up there. Like it's really high for me. Like
so,
to me,
I don't know how high it is overall, but in terms of like matching the song to the performer. Absolutely.
No,
like,
but
him and Vince.
That's all that matters, Blake. Don't pretend like it's actually like quality of the song. Don't go music nerd on me on ripping off 90s alternative songs and turning them or ripping off System of, or sorry, what's Disturbed? Down with the Sickness is what I was thinking about. Ooh, like guys who rip off
Disturbed
that.
Disturbed actually did a really bad remix of Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme at one point.
Could not be less surprised by this. Honestly, that's, you should make a good bit for you would be like making up fake wrestling trivia, like where it's like real fact or fiction.
And you have to ask me who's amateur hour.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Or get me, it right. Or if listen. I believe it.
Or JD's got to explain the memes he uses.
Can I tell you, I didn't know that was a wrestling meme that I used yesterday.
It's like a bit from a backstage. Yeah, so it's like a group of them, and they're kind of like these nerdy, lovable jobbers. And the one guy's like super over the top, super always loud and in your face. And it gets used as like the guy talking to the girl in the club meme, but wrestling.
Well, it's all I thought of with that meme is that, you know, when you see stuff on the internet where they go, once you see it, ... right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it was like Blake said it was a wrestling meme. And then I went, oh yeah, like the leggy blonde standing next to a short guy who's got like massive muscles.
How
and
did
like,
you find that meme if you didn't know it was like a wrestling, just like saw it online?
That meme is just, I got a memes folder. First of all, I'm no amateur.
Of course.
And second of all, That's just in the public domain now. That's not like a wrestling thing only. That has gotten into I've seen that on all kinds of different things. So,
it's a better version of that silly guy talking to a girl in the club one.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the guy standing in the corner. Yeah. Like they don't know I'm blah, blah, blank, blank, blank.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the Wake and Rake. Let's make some money. I'm going to start with the Blue Jays. I'm going to start with the easiest thing in baseball right now, which is I'm not going to make it my Wake and Rake pick, but it is my Wake and Rake pick in the sense of like I have been betting this nonstop for my entire life. By my entire life, I mean like all of May. Blue Jays first five under. Okay. I like to put a little bit more money on it and tease it up a run. Usually, that's been my play. And guess what I do all the time? I regret teasing it up, and I wish I would have gone the opposite way with it, where I took the plus money instead of the minus money. But yeah, Blue Jays first 500s. It's Kevin Gausman tonight. I guess my bet is he's going to continue to do what these Blue Jays starters have continued to do.
It's the only reliable thing right now.
Which is look awesome. The Blue Jays starters are incredible. You're right. Reliable, but to the point of they're the best in baseball. And I think Gausman is the greatest amongst the best group in baseball. So, yeah, if I get an opportunity to bet with these starting pitchers and the bats going the way that they are, I'm going to continue to play the first five under. And I know some people will continue to be afraid of bets like this because you start to lose a little bit of the value and because you end up creeping into, well, they have to eventually have one thing different territory, but I'm just going to continue to play the number. I don't see it here on the book that I use as of right
it's
now,
four.
But my guess is it's going to be, I was going to say four or four and a half. I would probably tease it to 4.5. Again, this isn't a totals for a full game, so it's not like you push or you lose on the tied at twos. I would bet this. This is my favorite bet of the day. Blue Jays under 4.5, first five innings, lock it in.
All right. That's makes sense to me. You've got Gausman and Hicks, and we know the Gausman thing. Jordan Hicks, he's fine. He's mostly just a guy, but this is a bet on the Jays.
I don't
offense.
Even know who he is. I didn't even look into one stat about this guy. I didn't look into one thing.
He's fine. He's a perfectly cromulent middle of the rotation starter.
Cromulent. What a word.
He's been walking a lot of guys this year, which would be trouble for any other team. But unless the bases are loaded, I don't think the Jays are the type of team to take advantage of that. He's had some walk issues his entire career, but when he does hit the zone, it's a lot of ground balls, it's a lot of worm burners. Not sure he's the best guy for Vlad to get it going against given his ground ball profile. However, he does throw just a boatload of fastballs really hard. So if he does miss, you know, Carlos Pena saying that Vlad should sit on heat and he should sit on heat that's mislocated up in the zone. Hicks is going to pound the lower third of the zone. He's going to pound the outside third of the zone with that fastball. He's going to touch 100 at times. If you can wait on a miss, though, that's potentially a good spot for Vlad. Here's and if you're Bo, I'm carrying the same strategy from the weekend over where Hicks plays a slider off of that fastball and throws it about 30% of the time. There's huge velocity separation, so I'd imagine someone of Bo's caliber can pick up on it. So, yeah, that's your scouting report on Hicks. But, yeah, he's
Blake,
he's just a guy.
Here's the thing. He is just a guy, and the numbers reflect that. And I totally get what you're saying in terms about like the profile of the pitcher. But here's the Blue Jays we've been doing this with. Oh, it's a crappy left-handed pitcher. They should get right against this guy. Nope. Hey, it's a someone who throws primarily fastballs, and this is a fastball hitting team. Nope. I thought that they were going to get right that way against the Cincinnati Reds, and they didn't. They scored what? Combined 7 runs in 3 games against Cincinnati. Like, no. There's no more benefit of the doubt for this team. They will eventually have a game where they break the barrier on early 4.5 runs against them, where they have a day where the batting order comes out in the first inning and they cash 4 runs right away. And I'll happily lose that money in that moment. Mm-hmm. But I told you who I am as a bettor the entire time that I've done this show, which is that you bet the streak, you don't bet against the streak. You bet the streak, you don't bet against the streak. There are numbers that indicate why the Blue Jays are struggling right now. And I don't see an entire team regressing. If it was one or two guys, yes, it's not.
Anyway, I was not saying all that stuff to argue against the first 5 inning under. It's just part of the role is set up Jordan Hicks, let you know so you can make your own decisions. No Blue Jay has ever faced him. Mm-hmm. So you'll get completely new data set here. But again, he's heavy fastball with a good dosage of low speed slider. We've seen guys like that recently. It's been an okay spot for Bo, even though he's struggled against fastballs because he has been able to identify those sliders. I'm thinking about it. The over 1.5 total bases hasn't been particularly great value of late, but that's probably the only spot to play, I think, unless you really think 100-mile-an-hour fastball is what's going to cure Vlad's timing issues, which
I bet on a Vladdy Bo, just both of them to get a hit prop this week. It was -125. I bet it against the guy from Cincinnati that wasn't Hunter Green, post Hunter Green guy. I thought it was the lock.
Right. Ashcraft.
I thought, by the way, Ashcraft sounds like an insult, just so you know.
It
like
does.
It's kind of like a.
If someone said
like
that quickly in passing.
Yeah, like, they're what? Like, hey,
did
Ashcraft.
You call me?
Yeah, they're like, hey, Ashcraft. I'd be like, oh, what? Yeah. But
you can't say that on the air.
I thought that was lock of the century. I really did. I thought I
the
was.
The Bo over basis is actually plus money today. It's plus 120.
Oh, there you go.
So could be actually worth the money today.
No, it's always
over
plus
one and a half bases. Oh,
but the one and a half bases where a lot of other guys are at 0.5 is the
difference.
No, Bo is always at 1.5, usually around plus 120, and that's what it is tonight.
Yeah,
correct.
So I would just say that Bo at least is the only guy hitting around 300 all of May. He has been pulling himself out of slump. It is kind of hilarious that he was the guy that wasn't going at the beginning of the year. He was struggling to the tune of like a sub 600 OPS. He gets it going and the rest of the team's like, couldn't see it. Yeah. I will say, okay, my confidence rankings right now, I'll reveal these actually maybe on tomorrow's show, but it's like I have Bo still ahead of Espinal. I said Espinal was number one yesterday, but Bo is still number one. But Espinal is two, then Kirk is three, and then I don't care who you pick from the rest of these guys right now. I kind of think Chapman's turning it around. Like, he looks better at the plate. I like his approach. He's hitting the ball harder. He's taking some walks. I'm kind of back in on Matt Chapman, but these other guys got to get going. And if that's my confidence rankings, the reason why I brought that up is because, like, if that's what I'm pointing to with this Blue Jays lineup tonight, then yes, keep playing the unders. I'm going to say don't play the full game under. The reason why or why I'm not is because I don't like taking the bullpen into play. And under 7.5, I don't know where I think the Cardinals bullpen is pretty decent this year. Let me take a little peek here. Bullpen ERA, I think they're all right. Yeah, they're middle of the pack. They're 14th. So you put that in concert with the The Jays, I just think it's easier to play this as a first five, get your money earlier, or know your betting result earlier. So that's my bet to me. Any other places where you guys see value here tonight? I'm seeing the Blue Jays as minus 154 favorites, which is pretty heavy considering what they've been doing lately, even if it is Gausman, plus 125 for the Cardinals. And, yeah, the total is 7.5 for the entire game.
Any Gausman pitching props?
I don't have any up yet.
Yeah, neither do I.
That was the only other place I would go, so.
Okay.
He's been pretty good.
Done?
We're done.
Think so.
What about Canada-USA IIHF game? We got to sprinkle that in. They play at 1 p.m. They are minus 2,858 on the money line.
Wait.
But the France.
Yes.
France.
France.
I thought you said
you said USA.
But... Oh, my God. Sorry. I was thinking.
Okay, we're all right.
No, 3.5-point spread. Yes. France. 3.5-point spread. Still minus 143 on that, though.
Yeah.
If you feel like sprinkling it, that's just a fun little
is this your bet?
Side one. No, I was just saying. We got to mention that Canada's playing in the IHF tournament. So that's all right. Sure.
I don't know.
You lose to those two teams, you don't get our love. You don't get
beat France. The hockey game that everyone actually is watching tonight is going to be Flames Oilers 9:30 puck drop. They're trying to show us a little bit of love out east, but it'll start probably closer to 10. This is a coin toss game according to Vegas. Minus 106 for the Flames, minus 110 for the Edmonton Oilers. The total's at 6.5. The over with a little bit more juice tonight. Ailish Profar, how are you feeling about this matchup?
Okay. Obviously, my wake and rake is the over. Like, that's hit three times, and I've put it in my wake and rake three times, and I do not see that changing. It is not going to regress. These guys are goal-scoring machines. Like, you said it, when you're riding something, you ride it till it changes, and I don't see it being a tightly 2-1 matched game tonight. So
I mean, it hit certainly the under last game. Right.
No.
Yeah.
It was 9-6 or something.
What?
No, it was the first game.
That's the first game.
Well, I had it in the wake and rake on
There's
Friday,
been a game
right?
since then.
There's
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just thinking about the two times. Sorry, the two times that I wake and raked it, it worked. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, yeah,
it's hit the over twice in the series, and then on Sunday it did not.
So
Sunday doesn't count for our show, so I forgot about it. It's gonna happen.
Okay.
So this series is 1-1 to Ailish.
It was still a 4-1 win.
That game didn't happen on a work night, so the series is now 1-1 again. That
game
doesn't count for Edmonton.
Over for me.
Okay.
How do you guys feel about Connor McDavid over 1.5 points? It's minus 175, which is wild line for him to get two points or more. But if you have any confidence at all at Edmonton in this game, you have some confidence in Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Is that too little value for you, JD?
Yeah. I think that's a fun prop to bet. But 2 points at minus 175 is outrageous.
You might as well do the goal at plus 130 for an anytime goal.
100%. 100%. I don't mind betting on McDavid. I think that if you actually, like, but that's not even a parlay piece you can use, right? Like, that's not even a parlay piece. That's 2 points still.
He's done it in 9 of 10 playoff games.
And that's why it's like, it's probably a good bet, but it's just, it's one of those things where I'm a, how do you justify this? And if I lose a bet, taking a hockey player in a playoff game to get 2 points at a minus almost 200 number, I cannot do that. So, yeah, if you want to parlay piece it, fine. If you want to bet it outright because you think it's a lock and you're willing to lay the juice, I mean, I've done things that are much worse lines for much less likelihood and less streaks. But to me, this is a principal point where I go, I feel like I'm getting robbed by the books here. Like, I feel like the books should be giving me way better odds for this, even if it is Connor McDavid, just because he's doing something historical. It's like, my brain is not ready to accept that that is a line for a player to get 2 points in a playoff game. You know what I'm saying? Like, I cannot get behind this bet. I cannot get behind this at all. I will say that I kind of think that I'm betting Calgary tonight on the money line at minus 106. The total, I'm not as convinced as Ailish. Like, that last game, it started to, like, normalize a little bit here. And Calgary, if they're going to win, they got to go into shutdown mode. They can't play this fire wagon hockey, this back and forth hockey. And to me, it's like that's going to be their path to victory in the series. Get better goaltending and completely zero in on shutting down McDavid and win the rest of the matchup. Stay out of the penalty box too. Like that's going to be the emphasis, I think, for these teams moving forward here is less penalties, less penalties, less penalties. That leads me to believe if it turns into a game like that, which is a little bit more defensive, a little bit tighter, that's going to benefit Calgary. I'm rolling with Calgary tonight. I think that this is going to be a long series. To me, maybe this is a little slight play into I don't want this to be 3-1, so I feel like it has the opportunity to be over quickly. This feels like it needs a Game 7. It certainly needs a Game 6. So I'm going to take Calgary on the principle of bounce back, even the series, play a little bit of a tighter game, stay out of the penalty box. The crazy thing is, though, it's like the Vladdy thing we talked about earlier where we go, oh, the excuses teams are pitching him tough. It's kind of the same thing with the Flames where through three games where Connor McDavid has been dominating you, you go, tonight's game plan, though, for Connor McDavid will be wildly different than the other game plan. So I'm totally like, I could look like a fool here, but yeah, I just think this is the entire thing for Calgary tonight. Slow him down a little, and maybe you'll have a better result. And play your stars more, because that's been another problem for Calgary, is Sutter has not been playing his studs enough. I think he unleashes them tonight. It's a must-win game. He rolls the top line over the boards for over the 20-minute mark, and they find a way to scrap and claw and get this thing done.
All right, I dig it. I think Calgary is due a good defensive game. They're too good a defensive team to not. Again, I know it's Connor McDavid, but you should still have 35 minutes of hockey where you're playing a pretty good defensive game, even if you're completely broken by him. So see them getting back to that system and
so
maybe.
You feel like the under.
I don't mean to bet against the over under. I just mean like goals are going to find their way in, and it's not as if Edmonton is the most stout defensive team. This has been a pretty big contrast between what Calgary looked like last round and most of the season to what they've looked like these last couple games. So I'm with you, JD.
Well, if it hits the over and Calgary wins, then we're all happy.
Take a 5-2.
It's not my wake and rake pick, by the way, Calgary. No, this is just, I'm just bringing this up. That's not my wake and rake pick. Do you want, so Ailish, you've already given yours. Blake, do you want me to
go ahead.
To give mine? Okay. All right.
I think I know what it is.
Do you? I like the Warriors tonight, but I'm not taking that. I'm not taking that. I'm going to stay away from that. I actually like a lot on the board tonight, which means I'm going to go broke. Like, here's the thing. I'll give you the bonus picks. I've already given you, I like the Blue Jays first five under. There's a bonus pick for you. I told you, I like the Golden State Warriors tonight. I think that they'll close it out, but I'm rooting for Dallas because I don't want to see a sweep. I don't want to see the Warriors sweep and have to do the love-in for the Warriors. I just want to watch a little bit more Luka. My pick is going to be the Miami Marlins, Tampa Bay Rays, first five under. It's two pitchers that I really trust. It's -3.5. It's a low number at only -125. Maybe you can find a little bit of a better price in a different book, 3.5, but under 3.5 for the first five innings. It's our boy, Blake McClanahan. He's been good to me all year long. I don't like the Marlins' bats. There's just a lot of let-up spots in their lineup. Same with the Rays. Honestly, the Rays are frustrating because all the guys on their team hit 200. They'll have a lineup that's better for this, but the pitching matchup is elite. Both teams have big let-up spots in their lineups. It's going to be a tight one no matter what because one of these teams scores a run, and all of a sudden it's a sweat zone for the entire first five innings. But I just like both these pitchers. I like both of them that they're punch-out artists, and that can get you out of jams. I'm just a big fan of both of these guys. I want to watch them play. I'm going to take the under. I'm going to take the bullpens out of it. First five, Rays and Marlins.
Guess what my wake and rake pick was until you made that one?
Same thing.
Was it same thing? Good.
It was.
That's good to know.
It's always a good spot. So I'm going to go with a different game that probably won't have a lot of offense. I'm going to go with the under in Seattle, Oakland. I'm going to go with the full nine inning under. George Kirby on the mound for Seattle. He's looked nice on his first couple starts here. Oakland's offense is anemic. We know that Seattle plays, like the ballpark plays down offensively, and they've come back down to earth a little bit as a unit. So you can get that one at under 7.5 right now, Seattle, Oakland. Don't like picking a late game, but that was my backup. So
that's all right.
By the way,
Seattle. Plus, we'll all be up for Battle of Alberta anyway.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's fine tonight for sure. Seattle's -160 on the money line. They've beat Oakland 13 straight games. 13 straight games. 13. Oakland was this big, sexy pick yesterday, and everyone was riding them because they were dogs, and Seattle won again. And I'm just saying that it's a little bit too much juice for a baseball game, but if you're out there and you're a believer in the streaks and you're a believer in betting those streaks, 13 in a row. Just saying, 13 times is a lot of times, and they're still the Oakland A's. So that's your wake and rake for today. Ailish Forfar is on the over in the Battle of Alberta. I am on the under in the first five innings of a baseball game, which is what I love. And two pitchers in Miami and Tampa Bay, first five under. And Blake Murphy is betting this game. Oakland Athletics, Seattle Mariners. Big believer in the Mariners and Kirby.
I'm a big George Kirby guy, yeah, and I'm a big Oakland is trash guy.
Okay, yeah.
They are now behind, thanks to the Jays pitching in part, Oakland's now fallen behind Cincinnati in terms of overall offense. So that should give you a picture. They have exactly one player hitting above league average, and it's Luis Barrera, who's a part-time player.
All right, so that's your wake and rake for today. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to Justin Bourne. What's the first domino to fall after the Mark Giordano extension? We'll ask him next. Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.